circumstances which we know are unfavorable. We try to live a little closer to conscience. We try to recognize the fact that when we say with our lips that a certain change is necessary to us, then it is high time for us to vitalize our words and begin to live according to this higher level of belief or conviction. A common occurrence of this today is alcoholism. The average alcoholic does not want to be an alcoholic. He wants whatever he believes to be the temporary benefits of intoxication, but he does not want to destroy his mind. He does not wish to inflict upon his body a situation that will give him years of physical pain. He would like to get over it, but the habit is hard to break. Some have found release through Alcoholics Anonymous. Others have taken the situation in hand personally and corrected the condition. But when they did so, this was a victory of soul power over brute force. It was a victory of the inner life over the habits of the body and the mental emotional complex. The individual who has been leaning upon some artificial stimulant or relaxing factor, when he begins to depend upon himself and is no longer dependent upon these false values, he is also confronted with another problem, namely, is his own self sufficiently dependable? Can he really back up his desire to improvement by taking the course that may bring some temporary discomfort or inconvenience? Is he strong enough to break a bad habit and survive the changes that this breakage will cause in his life pattern? This is something that, again, is becoming a very definite issue. Another one, of course, a very, very definite one, is the spread of various narcotic addictions among young people. Most young people today are aware of the tragedies of various hard drugs, but they are not able to escape the pressure of the peer group, and they're not able to break the habit once it has moved in upon them. They do not have the experience in life, they do not have the personal strength, and in most cases they do not have the family strength to assist them to make this correction. So the problem remains one which they will have to begin, at least, to work out within themselves through a private, quiet dedication of conduct to what is known inwardly to be true. This knowing inwardly that there is something better than what they are doing is a voice of conscience. It is something that tells them that it is not necessary for them to be weak. But in order not to be weak, they must become strong. They must take hold of their personal lives. If they do not take hold of these lives, they will gradually fall into the common failings, ailments, and tragedies of their times. Now, in many character problems, we have the same situation. Wherever the individual can honestly say to himself that he is not doing what is best for him, conscience is telling him something. Conscience is warning him. Conscience is trying to inspire him to make the necessary temperamental and personality changes. The most dangerous and important of these reformational processes is to gain some form of control over attitudes. Attitudes simply are very difficult for the individual to find solutions for. We have all kinds of attitudes that are simply not good. Nature, and involving soul power and conscience, very often helps gradually to get over attitudes that otherwise would be crippling. The individual who is under sudden grief, for example, may for a time be badly disoriented, but in the course of some months or a year or two, nature begins to heal this. And unless the person centers and intensifies the neurosis, he will gradually recover. There are other attitudes, however, which become more fixed with years, and these are attitudes of temperament or disposition which have been nursed perhaps since childhood. Therefore, the beginning of the release of the soul is through obedience to conscience. And if this conscience, when it does come through, does not invite in the right direction, then what we are suffering from is not a wrong conscience, but an inability to break through a personality pattern. Very often what we call conscience is nothing but attitude. And if the conscience impels us to do that which is not beautiful, not good, not essentially progressive for ourselves, then it is not conscience at all. There is no such a thing, really, as a bad conscience. It is a conscience burdened with the sins of the flesh. This means that we cannot always depend upon the inside. We do not know where inside pressures come from. Some of them may be of God, but some of them are merely pressures of our own ego, our own personal attitudes, trying to force themselves into a dominant position. Attitudes trying to become dictators of careers. And where this sets in, we also have to have the wisdom to note the false doctrine that is being forced upon us by our own selfishness and self-interest. Wherever we find lives that are not interesting, not useful, not constructive, not busily engaged in some worthy purpose, we find lives that have more or less fallen victim to self-centeredness. The individual who has no way, as far as he can imagine, of doing good is simply one who has measured good in the terms of his own attitudes alone and not in terms of the things that need doing. The older group, or the more aged people, have some more of this problem to consider. When they retire from some active occupation, which has acted as a general guide and rule, they fall back upon themselves. And sometimes when they fall back upon or into themselves, they fall into a vacuum. They fall into a condition in which there is no longer any particular incentives to do anything. These people, maybe with 10 or 15 years of good life ahead of them, simply descend into an inertia. They do nothing but waste time. They try to find something to do to fill the days that they are going to be here under Social Security. They are trying to get out of this world slowly but painlessly. And, of course, the problem is such that they usually fail in both cases. The individual who has time must recognize that life is a commitment to usefulness. Every individual who is not bound by some labor over which he has no control must place himself under the control of a constructive purpose. If he does not do this, he will not grow. If he does not grow, he will face the future with a poor hope. He will also carry away from this world less of good than he should. This life should be an experience which we take with us, in which we are glad, in substance, that we have been given the opportunity to grow. But there is nothing more tragic than to be given an opportunity and waste it. So older persons on retirement patterns should find things to do that mean something. They can always, in these days of great stress and trial, find useful outlets of some kind. They can assist those who are more unhappy than themselves. They can share whatever they have of insight and understanding with those in need. They can help disillusioned persons to realize that there are good people around them, even though they have not previously known many of them. Everywhere, growth is the answer to the problem. And growth means two things: that we shall change for the better inside, and having changed, shall use the new insights to control outer conduct so that it becomes more beneficial both to ourselves and to others. Failure to do this is a waste of life, and nature penalizes a waste of this kind. Actually, then, you can begin to nourish the soul, as many people could do, by turning in older years to various arts by means of which beauty and the insights to recognize universal law and order, become better disciplined. The love of the beautiful, through music, through painting, through folk arts and crafts, through all kinds of studies of natural things, to find their beneficial value to others. And having attained some such knowledge, sharing it with those whom we know need it. This type of career helps to feed the soul, for the soul rejoices in its own quality, and its own qualities are particularly charity and compassion. We can do the same thing with our attitudes. We can reach the point, perhaps, that Will Rogers said he reached, but he never met a man to whom he couldn't be a friend. And this is this kind of concept can be carried into personal living. We can gradually penetrate the differences that separate us and find in every living thing the same spiritual soul germ that we have within ourselves. We can gradually regain our own equilibrium in a world of unbalanced factors. We can develop a new understanding of religion. We can find how to meet and work with people of other faiths pleasantly, comfortably, happily, joyfully. We can begin to understand the great systems of thought that have helped to advance the world. And wherever we learn a new idea, we must apply it to our own conduct. If we have a mental extension, it should result in a material improvement in our orientation. And wherever we have leisure, wherever we have opportunity, we should carefully guard and censor our conduct under these new insights that have come to us. This is also a very valuable factor in improving the general condition of the world around us. If we do not support corruption, we will not have so much of it. If we find our television screen is not giving us what we want, we can turn it off. And in so doing, if enough persons do this, the changes will occur that we want. We can do the same thing with every expenditure. We can stop being wasteful. We can be more wise. We can control our own appetites. We can keep out of debt. We can make various adjustments in which our own personal improvement becomes a unit in social improvement. And as more and more persons awake to these realizations, the world itself improves. And as the world gets better, the voice of conscience in each of us will get stronger and be more available for the improvement of our environment. We can stop wasting. We can stop deceiving. We can keep the speed limit. We can do all kinds of things which do not really interfere with our social life in any major manner, but which will indicate that by degrees we are overcoming that instinct to chisel that is inside of so many of us. We will begin to think in terms of honesty, of weights and measures, and all these things will rest as a crown of peace upon the conscience. For the conscience wants these things. The conscience is there to give us advice in time of trouble. In the old doctrines and philosophies, conscience was an elder, a kindly old counselor, a sort of paternal grandfather, the voice of long ages of experience, given out and turned and transformed into the simple needs of coming generations. As children once gathered around their grandparents to hear the stories of old times, so the conscience within us is an eternal teacher. It is something that is constantly giving us the benefit of all of the living of time, all of the past and all of the days that have gone by, and also inspiring us to live better today and to build a better future for us all. If we listen to this, if we really allow it to speak, it will give us not only a clearer insight of what to do next, but will help to give us the strength to do what is next. This is another very serious problem, namely that the average individual wants to grow but does not know how. He does not know what steps he should take. He does not know how he should begin to improve himself. Education should have taught him this long ago, but it didn't do it. Religion should have taught it to him. It did in a way, but it never gave him the vital impulse to accomplish now those things which are most immediately necessary. Because of this, and because of the fact that environment is doing very little for us and much to us, we are in doubt as to how to start to grow. If we want to listen to conscience, if we want to follow it, how do we proceed? If conscience is really a step ahead of us, which is usually the case, how do we take that step? I think the answer to that becomes more or less obvious in the way in which conscience operates in the individual. Conscience usually steps in at a moment when the individual is under temptation to be less than himself. Conscience comes in as a result of repentance over an action which we know we should not have committed. A conscience may point out that we have said an unkind word when a kind one would have been more useful. Conscience tells us that we shouldn't have tried to get more than we were entitled to in some transaction. Conscience may tell us that when the wholesale price goes up 5 cents, we are not entitled to raise the price of the article by $5. These things we know. And if we're quiet for a moment, we realize this. But as a conscience bomb, we take another drink and keep on. Actually, when this voice of conscience begins to speak, all we really have to do is listen. And when it says to us, you shouldn't have done that, then we should try definitely to understand why we shouldn't have done it, and if possible, to undo the thing that we did that was wrong. And to remember the next time. For once you do a favor for conscience, you do something it wants you to do, it is more available on the next occasion. Having some more confidence in you, your conscience begins to be more active. And it will warn you beforehand what is likely to be the consequences of a mistaken action. The Pythagoreans had an exercise for this. At the end of each day, they went over the day and estimated it. They sat in judgment upon their own conduct. They remembered in detail how they met a situation. And if a meeting of that situation was obviously not good, they studied it, thought about it, and tried to decide what they should have done instead. By following this rule every day over a period of time, they gradually anticipated their mistakes and were able to rectify them before they actually occurred. They began to realize the attitudes which were peculiarly negative or the temptations which they as individuals had the greatest difficulty in resisting. In one person it might be one temptation and in another person a different temptation. But each in retrospection found out his own problem and also the consequences. And the consequences usually were sufficiently clear to form a basic documentation for a better understanding of the situations. Thus, by retrospection, we find out how much better we could have done something, how we could have prevented an antagonism from arising, how we could have forgiven a slight insult or a slight by a deeper understanding. And where it became obvious that a chilliness was developing within the structure of a family, how we could prevent this from getting worse, and how, in all probabilities, we could correct it. By retrospection, therefore, the individual finds out how much better he could have been than he was. And this discovery is usually quite valuable. Also, in the term of soul power, there is a certain contentment that comes in as an interesting factor. It has been said that man was not born to be happy, but he was capable of contentment. Happiness is a very large term. For most persons, it involves considerable extravagance, and in a great many instances, compromise of principles. But contentment is a state of inner peace. It is the individual who lives without regrets. An individual who has found in simple things that which is necessary for his contentment. Contentment is the recognition that he is doing what he is supposed to do at this particular moment, that he is living within a pattern of common sense, that he has reasonable control of appetites and emotions and attitudes, and that he can go to bed each night and rest well because he knows he has lived the day in a reasonably constructive manner. Comfort is important, of course, but in comparison to this problem of living in a conformable manner with principles and ideals, this is what we might term the nearest approach to basic happiness that we can know. Contentment is to be in harmony with the purposes of the soul. And this harmony means in harmonious relationship with conscience. There is nothing that we are doing that conscience says is not right. In this way, we can live in a very comfortable way, manner within ourselves. We cannot strive for the great and exorbitant satisfaction that we think to be necessary. We can be satisfied to live in a manner which gives us internal peace. Actual obedience to conscience is the source of internal peace. There is no longer any contradictory process working in us. We believe a certain thing, and that which we believe, we do. And if we find by experience that our belief was not good, we are not ashamed to change it. We do not have to be consistent with our previous attitude. We simply have to be right. And when we are right, we are comfortable. And when we are comfortable, we are contented. And the processes of growth within ourselves are advanced. Where we break faith with our principles and are not contented, where we are no longer in a comfortable internal state, it is now becoming increasingly obvious in the world of science that our conflicts with conscience are a contributing factor to many ailments. The physical body does not flourish under conflict. The physical body is not happy when the individual must live in a state of continual remorse over his own misdeeds. The body does not flourish under excesses of any kind. The digestive system wants you to be a contented human being. And when discontent comes in, dyspepsia comes in with it. When the individual no longer fulfills the simple impulses of his normal conscience, the high blood pressure comes along. Then comes all kinds of medications, most of which are intended to block symptoms, the cause of which does not lie in the body, but in the psychic integration behind the body. So wherever there are efforts or trials to go against the normal, the conscience, the rightfulness, the peace, the integrity of living, the body begins to suffer. Now, no one really enjoys suffering. They do not like pain. They would prefer not to have it. And one of the ways to reduce it markedly is to reduce stress. And stress is nearly always the effort of the person to bluff his way through something that is not right. Stress is a desperate determination to fulfill willfulness. And it is, as the old Zohar says, it is from will that evil fell. The self-will is the source, in most cases, of corruption and discord. So as long as this self-will forces us to do things that are not as they should be done, we're going to be sick. And sickness, in turn, gradually becomes chronic with the habits that cause it. And while there's no possible way of saying that we can overcome all illness at the present time, or that we can live indefinitely in a corporeal body that wears out, it is perfectly possible to say that the suit of clothes we have on now is going to fit better and wear longer if we take care of the attitudes of the person in it. if we take care of the problems of our own conduct, we will have this body in a better shape longer than we would otherwise. It is our own abuses and misuses. But it's not just simply that we stand in the draft and get a cold. What we are really suffering from mostly is not a draft. It is a pressure from within the ego. It is this tremendous determination to do what we please in a universe in which the law says we must do as we should. And the conflict between self-will and the divine will goes on until man obeys. And what he must obey and how he must obey and when and where he must obey are available to him in the form of the answers given by conscience. Conscience can lead him out of most of the slough of despond, which is mentioned in Pilgrim's Progress, and lead him into a contentment, an adjustment, a consistent relationship with life that is useful and purposeful. If he has mistaken submerged desires for conscience, he'll find out, because these submerged desires will not cure the problems. But where he keeps faith that the principles of life, where he is true to the grand plan of which he is a part, he will have a minimum of stress and a maximum of contentment. In fact, he may be so contented before he gets through with it that he'll actually decide that he is happy. Happiness, as the Arabian Nights tells us, must be earned. And the individual earns happiness by deserving it. And in order to deserve it, he must realize that happiness is not the fulfillment of desire. It is the correction of the impulse of desire within himself. If he desires only that which is good, desire becomes the basis of happiness or contentment. If he desires that which is not good, he can work himself to death, he can have one coronary after another, and he still will never achieve what he calls happiness. For happiness is a byproduct of doing what is next and doing it in the best possible way that we can. The only real instructor in this, the most intimate of all instructors, is this inner voice within ourselves. It sometimes gets tired, and you may not hear from it for a while. It gets worn out by being constantly blocked. It is even seriously offended by being ignored forever. But if you give it an opportunity, it will continue to work joyously to help the person to get over the little problem that he faces every minute. The individual was watching his favorite television program and was in the midst of the ninth murder when the phone rang. He went to the phone irritated because it was taking him away from a large dose of mayhem. He therefore was short on the phone, turned off the friend who phoned, told them to call some other time when they weren't so busy. In other words, busy watching murder. This was a mistake. He should have recognized the telephone call as a deliverance, as an opportunity to find some way or reason to break away from that type of problem. He should have been gracious and thoughtful and kind, and he should never have allowed his interest of this nature to offend someone else, but he might well do it. Therefore, if his conscience had been leading him, he would have been at least kindly and realized that even if he missed his favorite murder, it would probably be repeated 50 times in the next 30 days. Taking a different attitude, there are no interruptions. What is an interruption is a breather. If it's an interruption we don't like, we're unhappy about it. But whatever it is also an opportunity for the individual to express a better part of himself, to be selfless, to be more thoughtful, to be more kind, never to be rude or crude in relationships simply because he's busy pleasing himself. Gradually, the conscience will lead us to